Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Mully and Hall, up early to start your day with Chicago Sports Talk.
I got to tell you, I'm absolutely loving it right now.
Oh, my God. My God.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
This is for you.
Let's go.
Snap, Stafford, three-man attack by the Bears. Rolling to his right. Stafford still with the ball. Going to toss it into the end zone. Pass is thrown. Broken up. Incomplete. Jalen Johnson.
No time.
Breaks it up, and that's the ball game. Fade to black.
I don't think it matters at all whether it was a building block or a fluke. It didn't seem to matter at the time, and I don't think it matters right now. I think you're 1-0, and you're tied for the division lead with Green Bay. Big winners with Minnesota, against Minnesota. And, you know, when I think about that comeback victory, I mean, there are plenty of reasons for it, but it was achieved, and it did happen. And frankly, I thought they were out of the game. And the people that were texting me and the people that I was in conversation with, they all believed that this whole thing was a train wreck. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about how we're going to be talking about the end of Mitch and all that stuff and how quickly that would come. And all of a sudden, he catches fire.
Mike Mulligan.
He's fearless, he's observant, and has great emotional intelligence.
David Hall.
He's a winner, he's intelligent, he's innovative, he has strong character.
It was both fluky and a building block, and I think we both realized after watching enough football how difficult it is to win a game in the National Football League, and the Bears came home from a road game 1-0, and that's got to be the emphasis today if you're Matt Nagy, and I don't know that it will be the emphasis throughout Chicago because there was a lot not to like about Mitch Trubisky's game, and through the first three quarters, people can pick it apart and say that Bears made the wrong choice, and we'll get into some of that later, but in the fourth quarter, he rose up, and just when you expected nothing out of the quarterback position, he delivered. I don't know what it is, but that's what happens with Mitch Trubisky. He's last ditch Mitch. Just when you were ready to give up, he gives you reason for hope. And that happened yesterday, and I don't know how sustainable it is. And frankly, this morning, it doesn't matter.
Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
Let's freaking go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It's a Victory Monday. How about that? We didn't see any preseason, but we saw some kind of preseason, at least initially. That's the way I'm looking at it. They got their three quarters in, and off they went. The season starts in the fourth quarter, David. What do you think?
I guess that's the truth. I mean, they were down 17 points with 18 minutes to go, and you thought, okay, this is going to be an interesting week in Chicago because it will be the removal of Mitch Trubisky, the installation of Nick Foles, and then Mitch goes and throws three touchdown passes in the fourth quarter. And Mully, what a day it was in Chicago sports. We had the White Sox moving into position to be the best team in the American League. Alec Mills throws a no-hitter, and Mitch throws three touchdowns in the fourth quarter. And Alec Mills, the Cubs have had 16 no-hitters. But I know I shouldn't ask a question without knowing the answer. Have the Bears had 16 quarterbacks, 16 examples of quarterbacks throwing three fourth-quarter touchdown passes? Wasn't that rarer and more unusual to see? And you certainly didn't expect that.
No, I don't think – yeah. I mean, I didn't expect – a no-hitter from Alec Mills. I didn't expect the White Sox to be the top team in the American League, at least win percentage-wise. And I certainly did not expect Mitch to throw three fourth quarter touchdowns yesterday. I mean, all the evidence leading up to that was that he wouldn't do that. Now, again, you're aided by injury. You're aided by injuries to your opponent. They already were down their corner, their third overall pick, and then two corners, the two starters went out. So you're taking advantage of a fifth corner who's actually a special teams player. But guess what? That's called the NFL. You take advantage of that. The very fact that the Detroit Lions could not change what they were doing defensively really didn't react to those injuries. Just they had the next man up philosophy, and we're just going to keep doing what we do because we can jump in and out of any kind of defensive scheme. No, you can't. And that was pretty ugly. And congratulations to Mitch. But again, I think that a lot of people had seen a lot from the quarterback that they didn't care for. And there were a lot of people, at least people that were calling me, texting me, people that I was in contact with who really thought that the end had come and that, you know, we've seen this before and no one wants to see it again. And even Mitch, when he talked to Peter King, said that you just can't let yourself go back into that mentality. You can't go to that dark place. Which means that he's been in that dark place before.
Yes.
And I think he has been. And I think that there were a lot of really fortunate things that happened, not the least of which was the most remarkable football season we're ever going to see, where there is nobody in the stands and there is no crowd reaction and there's no noise and you're allowed to sort of function without limitation. And that helps you not pick up stupid penalties, pre-snap penalties, and it helps you to be in a position to win a game. Despite all that, David, you needed a drop touchdown pass with 6 seconds left. The Lions had that game won even when they lost the game.
You can't overlook that. That's happens in all the sports, though. There are breaks that happen that allow teams to win games they shouldn't win. The Bears are the latest example of that. And I think that when you talk about, you know, slipping into that dark place, to Mitch and like everybody watching, it felt a lot like 2019. It felt a lot like what we watched last year. It was for three quarters the 17th game of the 2019 season. And then the fourth quarter happened and it felt like a new start. And they need to look at it that way. And I think you can respect what Mitch did in terms of showing resolve and resilience individually, and I guess the Bears collectively, and still acknowledge the fact that that was not good enough. He's got to be better. So I guess, Mully, I'm asking you, do you feel better or worse about the Bears this season, this morning, in light of what happened? Because obviously a lot of people we're hearing from on the text line, I don't know that they feel any better, despite the fact that the Bears are, in fact, 1-0.
Yeah, I feel better. I really do, because, you know, the way that you generate winning is by winning. Winning can become a habit. You won a game that you probably shouldn't have won, and now you've got the Giants coming in here, and you go from being a 3-point underdog to 5.5-point favorite against that team. That is a big swing, and I think that the Bears can handle the Giants. I really do. I don't think very much of the New York football Giants, and I think the Bears are going to start the season 2-0. And I think that creates different expectation level. It creates we haven't seen the Bears win a season opener in a while, man. It's been a few minutes here since we've
Seven
seen
years.
Something like this.
Yep.
So it's really uplifting, the idea that you start your season with a couple of wins. And I don't want to get ahead of myself. We'll be breaking down the Giants. We'll be talking to it. We'll be treating it with the respect that every NFL game deserves. But that's the difference to me in a season, to open with a win against the team that frankly should have beaten you, and you somehow, whether you back into it, whether you take advantage, whatever way you want to term it, because they did win the game, but they did steal that one. Olin's right about wearing your mask as you leave that stadium, because it did have that feel. But guess what? That's what good teams do. Are the Bears a good team? Not yet. But who knows? Maybe we're talking differently about them now that we got a game under our belt, now that you got hopefully Robert Quinn coming back, now that you got a little seasoning on that defense. Maybe they needed that one.
And the way that they won that game yesterday, you know, defensively, you look at the numbers and they weren't impressive and they were frankly disappointing. They did not stop the run, and you wondered about the absence of Eddie Goldman in the middle of that defense, and they didn't really look like a team that was conditioned well enough to kind of play four quarters. But what happened? They did yesterday what we wanted them to do all throughout 2019 defensively. They did not have the numbers, but they did create the takeaway when they needed it most. And Eddie Jackson read the route perfectly. He read Matthew Stafford's eyes. He broke up the pass, and it fell into Kyle Fuller's hands. And that takeaway was a big reason why the Bears celebrated yesterday, because they got their defense to be opportunistic. Not necessarily consistent, because they weren't that, but they were opportunistic when the Bears needed a turnover in the fourth quarter. They got it, and they didn't do that enough last year.
Was it jammy, as the British would say? Did they get lucky? And I think that's the question that we'll be asking tomorrow, which is it sustainable? But for right now, we watch them win a game and we celebrate it because it's Victory Monday. 312-644-6767. Let's try Don. Don's on the west side. Hey, Don, good morning.
Hey, Don.
Good morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good.
Okay, yeah, this is the first one of the year. I'm going to try to make it a good one. So I have a couple observations, man. Mitch Trubisky, to me, is a lot more of the same. I mean, Grady had the fourth quarter comeback and all, but we need that the first three quarters. During the postgame, a reporter asked him, and it kind of was a loaded question, well, did the Lions, doing the mixing up of the zone and man, like, give you guys problems? So basically, were you confused? And Mitch said, yeah, until the fourth quarter when they went strictly to man, and then that's when he turned it on. That's not good, because Mitch, that's been your problem. Secondly, as far as the defense goes, why doesn't Mac use the bull rush anymore? Like, I noticed going down, I don't know if it was the last drive or one of the drives the Lions were moving, and he had the tackle on the island. And instead of just bull rushing him with the little straight arm move that he does where he walks him back to the quarterback, he's trying to duck and go underneath and go around him. So I'm thinking, like, either Mac is tired or he's hurt because he looks slow. So my thing is, maybe I doubt he's fatigued, but, you know, maybe he's hurt. But that didn't look good. You're on the island, and, you know, you are the multi-million-dollar guy that we brought in for that. And then you actually had Henry in on one of my other questions. Doesn't that mean what does that say about our team that we were able to come back in that fashion in the fourth quarter with 4 minutes left or whatever it was and have 21 unanswered points?
That's great. Thanks stuff.
Phone call. Yeah. Well, I think we'll start with the last question first. They're going to focus on the fact that it says that they're resilient. They have resolve and they don't get down to a point where they can't come back. And maybe you cannot make a living that way in the NFL. You cannot, but they did yesterday, and that's good enough. As far as Khalil Mack, his numbers have been down. I think Brad Biggs pointed out, Molly, that he's got four sacks in his last 12 games. I don't know what the Lions did special to defend him yesterday without Robert Quinn. My sense is that if you watch the game again, as it will later, we'll find that they did something. But he does have to be a little bit more disruptive, and he has to be a little bit more I guess he needs to be louder than just having his sideline meetings where they showed him on the Fox cameras being a little more vocal than usual. But we'd like to see him make some noise in the backfield as well.
He was on the injury report all week. He's got a knee. He wasn't able to practice on full practice on Wednesday and Thursday. That's usually a huge giveaway. And as you mentioned, the guy opposite him, the guy they spent all the money on, and there was a lot of money invested, David. What was it, $51 million? You talked about it before the game.
Yeah, $51 million. Nick Foles and Robert Quinn were guaranteed, and they were spectators yesterday.
Yeah, so that's a lot of money not to have an action for you, and I understand that. But I do think, to answer the question about the bull rushing, I think the guy's carrying a knee issue, and I think that maybe he's not the same entity that he once was when he's fully healthy. Now, when does he get healthy? Maybe it's as simple as getting the other guy back makes both of them healthy. I don't know. We'll have to monitor that. All right, we got Mike. Mike is in Rockford. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Morning, Mike.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, if Max hurt, my question is, I understand they got to play everyone they can play to win, but if you got a knee issue, they should have sat Mac out a week or two as well. I mean, to me, it's more important to have him healthy going down the stretch than dealing with the nagging injury. Knees don't heal quick, as we all know. Leg injuries seem to linger on. So that kind of could be an issue, guys, going down. I don't know how bad it is, but, I mean, he was out there. But he didn't. I agree with that last caller. He didn't look himself. And
Mike, but here's the thing. I mean, a knee injury, you could take 2 weeks off and still have a problem with it, right? I mean, Khalil Mack wants to be there and on the field and playing for his team. And he needs to be for them to be better. And I hear what you're saying. Nobody's perfect in the NFL. Nobody's feeling great. We're seeing guys that are out of shape. They got to work their way into game condition. They didn't really practice with pads on. They don't really do that much anymore. I know they had padded practices, but it's nothing like it used to be back in the day, and there's absolutely no preseason. So, unfortunately, you have to use these games to get yourself into condition.
You're exactly right, Mully. You can't look at yesterday and draw too many hard and fast conclusions, I believe, because of the lack of a preseason. A lot of these guys, I think the conditioning, as Olin pointed out, was a factor on both sides, but I think you saw in certain guys, and maybe Khalil Mack was dealing with some of those issues as well. Not an excuse. He needs to be produced, no question about that. But I don't know if you want to fault him for playing through an injury whose seriousness we really just don't know.
Especially when the other guy's not available. And guess what? You know, Robert Quinn, if and when he comes back, I mean, how much did that guy play in the preseason? I know he's had a couple practices. It might just be a couple practices, David.
Well, the mystery sort of mounts with Robert Quinn's injury and his availability and what has happened to him and how serious it is, because the Bears aren't saying much, and he is valuable in that pass rush. But you're right. The longer this goes on, the more you do start to wonder.
It's just sitting out there, and you just scratch your head, and you're just wondering and hoping, and that's what we're left with. All right, we're going to bring in Bruce Levine. We had a no-hitter by the Cubs. We had a huge comeback victory by them. The White Sox finished off the Tigers, I believe 9 of 10, right? They did that against the Tigers and the Royals, and now they step up in class today. We'll bring in Bruce and talk about it. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Play ball!
Bruce Levine, 670, the Score baseball analyst.
It is all baseball.
32 years, baseball veteran reporter.
Bruce, I've known you for a number of years now.
Breaking stories faster than a cheetah can run. And as far as I know, cheetahs are speedy.
I went ahead and broke the story on Twitter, and then, of course, had to write a story on the website at 670thescore.com.
Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine.
By the way, I loved you in The Wizard of Oz.
Bruce Levine.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Alec Mills, a great story and a great guest who will be on The Score this morning, 9:30, with Dan Bernstein. So stay tuned, and you get to hear how Mr. No-No feels. And we're delighted to welcome in our baseball expert. Bruce Levine joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, Bruce.
Good morning, guys. Can you imagine somebody that, you know, is some more nondescript as far as his baseball resume goes, throwing a no-hitter like that? That was something sensational to watch, and a pretty emotional as well when you watch the Zoom and you interview him and talk about, you know, the trip here and some of the support he had, especially from, you know, guys like his teammates, and, you know, the feeling of, you know, not really knowing how surreal it actually was for him to go through this and wanting to look back, make sure it was him.
It's pretty extraordinary when you think of where he was before the season even started, right? I mean, this wasn't a guy that you imagined in the starting lineup to begin with, and it took injury to lead to opportunity, and then you take advantage of that with something as historic as a no-hitter, the 16th in Cubs history. So, you know, congratulations to him. It's one of the real feel-good stories of this year, and there's been a lot of them.
Yeah, and, you know, when you look at the fact that he pitches backwards and he ramped up, you know, throwing breaking balls, his breaking balls, curveballs, like, you know, 20% of the time yesterday he threw a curveball between 66 and 72 miles an hour. That's unbelievable. And just the way he uses his fastball as his changeup, he really had the Milwaukee hitters eating out of his hand.
Bruce, I thought as significant as that was and always will be to Alec Mills' career in the context of this Cubs season, I wonder if Jason Hayward's home run on Saturday night was more important just because of what it represented and how it seemed to have awakened the Cubs' bats offensively and also may have knocked the Brewers out of it. It may have broken the Brewers with that swing of the bat.
You're right, David, and it probably did. I mean, Milwaukee has to play St. Louis 10 times. I'll repeat that. They have to play them 10 times over the next 2 weeks here. You know, doubleheaders all over the place for St. Louis. You know, Milwaukee kind of reeling right now. So it's up to the Cubs to just kind of hold serve here. Now, it's not going to be that easy of a trek because they're fighting Cleveland, Minnesota, and White Sox teams that are scrambling to win the American League Central Division along the way, with including four with Pittsburgh. But you know, I think you're right, David. The idea that they might have turned the corner, and they were looking. I mean, the offense had completely disappeared, and the resurgence in that ninth inning, in the last 10 innings they've played, certainly been more indicative of a team that you can imagine going to the playoffs and doing something.
You know, when we were making our picks before the season started, I think I wanted the Sox to win 31 games. Just have a winning season. I didn't think this was the year. It was next year. Just show something going in. And, David, I think you were significantly higher, so congratulations. But 14 games left. They've hit 30. What do they have to do to win this division to be the best team in the AL, for God's sake?
Keep everyone healthy. You know, I think the most significant start of the year for the White Sox will be Dallas Keuchel on Thursday, coming back from missing one start due to the back issue that he had. That is the key to them, for them. I mean, obviously, they have to beat Minnesota here. Four huge games here this week. Then they play Cleveland as well next week for four games. So that's going to be the season. But the way this team goes about it, there seems to be an energy, there seems to be a confidence that has built up in this team that even when they don't get a good start and they get a young guy throwing a nervous first inning yesterday, then showing up for the next three innings and just they piece it together somehow. And it's just a very confident team that's going into this last couple weeks here looking to win the division.
So, Bruce, let's talk about Jonathan Stever for a second. 22 years old, product of Indiana University, native of Wisconsin, good athlete in high school, comes up, never pitched higher than single A in terms of making a start, and yet there he was yesterday on the mound in a pennant race. And after that first inning, as you alluded to, pretty good, pretty promising. And there's a lot to like about Jonathan Stever. Do you think he gets another start? And how surprised were you that he was there in the first place?
Well, I mean, they told him a week ago that he was likely going to start. And then a few days ago, 4 or 5 days ago, they told him for sure he was going to be in there. You know, it's great. Look, the future looks extremely bright for the Chicago White Sox. I know you want to stay in the moment, in the year here. But when you see these young pitchers coming along in the bullpen and starting to look like professionals like Hoyer and Foster and now Stever, you see some really great arms that have been developed in the organization. And that bodes well for the future. But right now they're helping him try to win. I don't know if he gets another start. They probably think not, hoping that Keuchel is going to be healthy. And again, when you look at Thursday's game, you don't like to get too far ahead of yourself because you have three games with Minnesota, who's only a game behind you this week, before you get to Keuchel. But Keuchel's the key to staying healthy, you know, moving forward for them. They're going to be in the playoffs. They're going to have a nice seed regardless. It just depends on how healthy their pitchers are. If Lopez, five innings the other day of shutout ball, was that real Saturday? Or was it just another bad team that the Chicago White Sox were playing that they dominated? I give the White Sox tremendous credit for going 21-3 against Detroit, Kansas City, and Pittsburgh. They had to take care of teams that were not as good as they were, and they did it. They wiped them out. Now with being 2-4 against Cleveland, 2-4 against Minnesota, they have to prove on another level that they can compete and win those games.
Yeah, obviously this four-game set is huge, and it starts with Dylan Cease on the bump, and he's had a weird September. I think he has he's allowed 5 runs in 10 innings pitched. So that is probably a higher ratio than you're hoping for. He needs to have a good outing, and it's a really good team that he's facing.
You know, he's learned to pitch to contact. If you go back and you look at his numbers, he had high walk and high strikeout ratios that were kind of skewing him being out there for just 5 innings or so. Now, the ability to pitch to contact and not worry about it, something that young pitchers have a difficult time, especially guys with great arms. I mean, this guy's 98 miles an hour when he walks into the game. He's throwing 98 when he walks out, whether it's after 60, 70, 80, or 100 pitches, the guy has a terrific arm. But now, like many young pitchers, learning to pitch to contact, learning not to be afraid of that contact, knowing that you're not going to strike out everybody, and make, you know, making more quality pitches, saving some of those pitches for later innings, that's the key to his progress. So a big start for him tonight against Barajas of the Twins. It should be a fun game tonight.
Bruce, I'm curious what this no-hitter might do to Alec Mills' stature, not necessarily maybe in the game, but to the Cubs and how they view him and how much they trust him moving forward. You know, John Lester looked like John Lester again on Friday night, but I think the question that you wonder is if Alec Mills has another couple strong starts, and certainly not no-hitters, but strong starts and builds off this, if the Cubs are facing a Game 3 situation in the postseason, does Millsy get the ball over Lester? Is that something that is even possible to consider at this point?
I think everything's possible at this point. You're going to see Quintana and Chatwood come back this week and throw full bullpens and maybe be ready as early as the weekend or next week to go in and help in the bullpen. Not necessarily, they're not looking at them as starters right now, but they're looking to extend their innings once they get out there. 2 injured pitchers, you don't want to count on them when you're going into the playoffs, but those are the seasoned guys that you have. I think Lester's start was the biggest one that the Cubs pitching staff has had over the last 2 or 3 weeks. That was huge for a pitcher to show that he indeed still has something left, can correct his mechanics, can go back into the pitching lab and do something to show that he's still a quality starting pitcher. Because it seemed like he was saying that he had run out of answers. And when you hear a guy like John Lester with that great resume and that championship-level resume along with it, when you hear him throw his – see him hands up in the air, hear him talk about the fact he doesn't know what the next move is, you worry about him and the pitching staff. But that was a 6 innings of shutout ball that was – pretty significant for the Chicago Cubs. So I think he's the number 3 pitcher until proven not there. And then they start piecing it together as they move through the playoffs.
Great stuff, Bruce. Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce.
Guys, have a great week. Take care.
It's known as the shot that was heard around Elmhurst, the home run that that was hit by Jason Hayward that really kind of changed everything, if you will. Changed the season, ended the scoring drought, the 3-run bomb in a 4-run inning that just turned the season.
Fly the W!
Yeah, and it was the shot heard around Elmhurst. And I can't believe we haven't talked about it. I mean, that was such a significant moment.
Well, it came off Josh Hader as well. And
yes,
that was the thing. You know, here's lefty on lefty. Rizzo works the at-bat, 2 strikes, gets on base, and here comes Hayward, who's had the week that he had. Mully, go back to last week, boy. You know, he's got shortness of breath, got this mysterious ailment, and he comes up and, hits the home run. Heard around Elmhurst, is that how far it went? I'm not quite sure it got that far, maybe further. Maybe they heard it in St. Louis. I don't know where it echoed to.
All right, we got a Bears victory. It's a victory Monday. We're going to talk about it and what happens next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Anytime you can win in this league, you know, you always want to cherish those. So that part was awesome. I think it was really good for our team just to show the togetherness that we had and to be able to fight through some of that adversity. We know it wasn't too clean those first 3 quarters, but I was proud of the coaches and the players for being able to pull through that. You want to be able to get some scheme involved and take advantage of matchups that you have. But then also you need to have execution. And that's what you saw yesterday with Mitch and those wide receivers, the offensive line, and the tight ends, the running backs, everybody collectively together. And Mitch had to make throws, and he did that. And then, you know, you saw some big catches there by those wide receivers, Anthony Miller in particular, for the go-ahead touchdown. And I love the communication we had on the sideline in between timeout breaks. We knew where we were going with the football, and then they had to make the throw, and that's what they did. So when you have all that come to fruition and happen, it's special, and now we just got to use this to keep us going each week.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is the voice of Matt Nagy. He was on this morning, our sister station, WBBM. News Radio 78. They do an interview with him every morning after the game, and we give you the highlights. And there you go, David. Anything surprise you by what he said there?
Well, no, I think he's consistent with the fact that looking at the first outing of the season, it felt like preseason in that guys have to learn how to get their legs under them again. The speed of the game is going to be an adjustment no matter how experienced you may be, and that was why we saw a lot of mistakes yesterday. It wasn't as sloppy as I think it could have been, but it wasn't as crisp as it will be. And that's somewhere in between. Look, everybody wants to try to extract meaning and to draw hard and fast conclusions after 60 minutes of football. Fact is, yesterday was an indicator of things to come, and some things will be, you know, follow a pattern and some things won't. The bottom line is that if you're Matt Nagy and you understand how hard it is to win a game in the NFL, and the Bears are 1-0, and that's got to be the focus. No matter how many things you see on tape pop up, you want to focus on the resiliency and the resolve of your football team.
And if you're Matt Nagy, you know how hard it is to win a season opener. He's now 1-2, so he's got to be feeling great about it. And again, the Giants are not a highly thought of team, and they come in here next week, and the Bears are 5.5-point favorites. If you follow the Vegas odds makers, that is a game that you should be able to win. So here's hoping they get off to that kind of a start, and a couple of wins to open the season makes everything – it makes the medicine go down a little better, David. A little bit of sugar is what that
is. It's an opportunity with the Giants coming to town, and it's an opportunity to build on the things that you did like about yesterday. And one of them, to me, was your attempt to emphasize the running game. Now, it wasn't as much as some people might have liked if you're Tom Thayer and you love old-school football, but the Bears did – have 28 running plays, and they only did that five times last year, Mully, in a 16-game season. So that tells you that when Matt Nagy was talking in preseason about the trying to establish an identity and trying to kind of be more cognizant of the fact that he got away from that last year, what he's trying to say, and maybe he's talking to himself, establish the run and let everything else come through that. And that will help eventually Mitch Trubisky. I'm not saying it's going to make him more accurate, but it will make him better if you have a running game that other defenses have to respect.
I'll ask you the question I asked Olin, which is, when you see that game, when you pick that game apart, and we'll both go and watch it again today. And what is the signature? What is the signature of this offense? Do you think that they are establishing a particular type of identity? What would it be?
Well, inside that locker room, my sense is that we're guessing here, but my sense is that you feel really good, and in those coaches' meetings, you feel really good about your offensive line. And I'm not sure that you were able to say that often enough last year, which is part of the reason you were 8-8. I think that you came out of yesterday and – you know, the quarterback thing, you don't want to dismiss it, and you're not ignoring it, because it's just so unpredictable. The one thing that you feel best about yesterday that you come out of and you can maybe predict, or the offensive line looks like it can be improved, and it looks like you can win with this group. And number two is your receivers did step up, and I think that is something maybe you expected. But Anthony Miller made some clutch catches. Allen Robinson, you expect him to make those catches. And Darnell Mooney, the rookie, I believe, from the fifth-round pick, he was a guy that came out of nowhere, I think, to make a contribution. So I guess number one would be my offensive line. And number two, I like the way my receivers stepped up.
It's interesting. Peoria Matt, who always gets it right, corrects my Julie Andrews tribute. A spoonful of Lions helps the losses go away. There was a very real active role that the Lions played in losing that game, right down to 6 seconds left, yeah. Right down to the drop touchdown pass that would have won the game. And it's, you know, as much as you sit here and you talk about the identity of the team and what you're doing, listen, the end of that half, we haven't talked about that yet. That was one of the all-time disasters when Matt Nagy calls the timeout because you got to get the ball back because guess what? We're going to go in with the lead. And what do you manage to do? You have a 3-and-out in 14 seconds, and you set up the Lions at midfield, and they take the lead going into the half. That was a disaster for the Bears.
No doubt about it. Hey, look, nobody's diminishing the fact that the Bears got a little lucky there at the end with DeAndre Swift and the ball slipping through his fingers. But you know what, Molly? Some days the ball will slip through a rookie's fingertips and for a sure touchdown will not be scored. And other days the ball will clank off the goalpost twice and your field goal kicker will run away and hide and you lose a playoff game. That's football. I mean, breaks happen in all the sports. You don't want to overreact to a victory by saying that because you won it masks all ills. That would be a mistake, and I don't think anybody's saying that at Halas Hall. And nobody certainly is saying that on our text line or our callers. They understand what they saw yesterday, and that was the Bears won a game that probably is better accurately described as an escape from Detroit. They probably didn't deserve to win that game, but they did because of the opponent, but also because they refused to go away. And that you want to give them some credit, but it's all – in the context of knowing who you played and why you won, it's easier to justify and rationalize when you're 1-0 than 0-1.
312-644-6767. That is the telephone number. It's a victory Monday, and it's not just a victory Monday for the Bears. We had the turning point victory for the Cubs, the no-hitter for the Cubs. We got the White Sox sweeping the Detroit Tigers. Huge, huge victory Monday in Chicago. Let's get to Joe. Joe is in Mount Greenwood. Good morning, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Go Bears. I'm a White Sox fan all my life and a Bears fan. I don't understand why this Nomara guy is playing and we got Mengel on the bench. And I like Mendick instead of Madrigal. Maybe you guys could explain to me what the heck Renteria is doing because I don't see it. I don't see it at all. I don't get it. I'll hang up and listen.
Joe!
I don't get it.
Joe! Yeah. Will you look at the standings for me, please? Will you please?
Listen, I want to get to the World Series, and I want to win it. I want us to win it. I don't want us to lose it. And even if Mengel doesn't get a hit, the guy's a great defensive player. This other guy, Nomara, he stinks.
Who's Nomara?
Nomara? Is that Mazzara? Nomara, yeah, Mazzara?
Mazzana, whatever. Mazzana. Margarine, okay. Whatever his name is.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's...
Can't hit. And yeah. He can't field. Yeah.
Okay. And he sure is ugly. No, he's a very handsome man. Look, I think that Nomar Mazzara was brought in with the idea that it's a short term deal. The idea was that that you wanted to get another thunder stick in the lineup, and they have a bunch of them. And I get what you're saying. You know, we haven't seen the big power and the home runs and all the rest of it. He was down for a while with COVID-19. He doesn't have the same sort of understanding with the fan base. I think that Engler, is that what he called
him? Engler, yeah.
Engler, yes.
Yeah. Or Mengel or whatever. He might have called them both.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like we're back to 2014 complaining about the Blackhawks' sixth defenseman. Yeah, it just seems like, okay, I get it. But the Sox, that's not the story. That's far, 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 far from the story. But I understand that people want to look at every aspect of the lineup. Look, today is September 14th, 2020. The last time that we experienced something we're experiencing today was September 30th, 2008. And that is the Cubs and the White Sox and the Bears all being in first place at the same time. Enjoy it, savor it. You can play it if you want. It's great. That's part. That's why we're here. But the White Sox number eight hitter, I'm not going to lose any sleep over his lack of production.
Yeah, I want them to be better. I'm surprised he doesn't like Madrigal. I think he's a different type of hitter to have in your lineup. It's almost like you get kind of the pre-leadoff hitter before the leadoff hitter, the way this lineup turns, the way that it has. And you know, Tim Anderson is having an unbelievable run. He had another four-hit game. I think he's leading the league in four-hit games. You know, we mentioned earlier seeing Abreu with the seven RBI game. He now is leading Major League Baseball in RBI. You know, you got Tim with the batting average. That's not a fluke based on what happened last year. He's doing it again. And you got all the RBI for Abreu, not a fluke, doing it again. I think there are some wonderful things going on with the White Sox. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if Nomara and Mangold fall into a category of worry, but
no.
Mazzano, whatever.
No. You got the right attitude. Look, Jose Abreu, the Sox could have the American League MVP. The Cubs could have the National League Cy Young Award winner. Both teams are going to be in the postseason. That is going to be fun because if the Bears open up 2-0 like they should after the Giants come to town on Sunday, this is going to be fun. And we are talking about live sports in a sports passion, in a sports city passionate about the teams here. And we're in the midst of a pandemic. So let's enjoy this while it lasts because this is something we have been waiting for a very long time.
You know, callers like Joe from Mount Greenwood, God bless him, huge Sox fan, obviously. That makes me miss being at the game so much and just interacting with strangers around you and having mispronounced names and just, you know, oh my God, that puts me right in the bleachers at Guaranteed Rate Field right there.
It's beautiful stuff. All right, we've got Dan Bernstein next, Mully and Haw, the score.
Mazzano, whatever.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.